Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I'm kind of feeling like Twitter has less of a bot problem and more of a butt problem.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Rolling on here in the Zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Abriscoe here in studio as Jason Anderson's out at Blue Hills Country Club forthekids.org. Again, more information on everything you just heard Jason talk about with Kevin Timmons, John Barnes of Nick and Jake's. Again, for the kids, F-O-R-E, forthekids.org. Obviously, incredibly important, impactful cause to rally behind. So, for more information, you can visit them again there at forthekidskc.org. Sorry, I think I missed the KC the first time I read through that. Forthekidskc.org will get you there. I imagine that we will talk plenty about all sorts of Chiefs things with and without Jason, but I mentioned last segment that I had a stat from the offensive line that I wanted to bring to the table as we look around and see that the O-line had an incredible night last night. The running game was chugging. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looked good. Isaiah Pacheco even won a little bit of Jason's love back in the first hour. But I saw this morning from our friend Adam Teicher of ESPN. Numbers from ESPN stats and info show why Chiefs were so good in the run game last night. They had a run block win rate of 83.3%, which is second best in the NFL for games played in week four. As a comparison, the Chiefs had a 66.1% win rate last week versus the Colts. Individual numbers show nice games from Andrew Wiley and Creed Humphrey in particular. Wiley won on 96% of pass blocks and 84.8% of run blocks. Humphrey was 100% on pass blocks, 87.9% on run blocks. Jason, I was very, very pleased with the O-line's bounce back game there after things looked incredibly scary in week three. I thought week three, you know, the biggest culprit there was the special teams, but the biggest concern was the offensive line. Last night, literally no concern whatsoever in the running game, the passing game, maybe a little bit. You know, you mentioned in Orlando Brown where his health is and all of that, but especially on the ground, the O-line was just moving dudes.
Yeah, I liked what I saw last night, and it was a good response because the Colts defense isn't as good as the Bucks. And if we're like last week coming out of that game, we spent a good portion of last week saying, what are issues that are long term? What are issues that are blips on the radar?
Yep.
And the concern we had was, what's going on with the offensive line? Is this something where they can just simply improve execution, or is there an issue that they are playing as high of a level as they can given health, that being Orlando Brown and Trey Smith? And if you have a couple of guys on your offensive line that are hampered even just a little bit, now this guy gets the edge on the right guard, and this guy turns the corner, so Mahomes sees the pressure coming from the right guard. He fades to his left. Oh, whoops, Orlando Brown's getting beat, and now it's a sack, or it's a, you know, negative play, or it's just an incomplete pass, or something like that. You got a couple of guys that are playing underneath the expectation of how they can play. You hope they can improve. And if it was a health thing, then it's a matter of when can they improve. If it's not a health thing, then there is an expected level that they should get back to playing to. That was a big concern last week. And so that's what I am very pleased with last night from the offensive line, is that they weren't perfect, right? I mean, no offensive line is ever going to have a perfect game, and against that front, you know, you're going to have to be ready to go. But there was a tweet last night, and I can't remember who it was because there were 1,000 tweets last night, of just singling out Trey Smith against Vita Vea, and he's bull rushed, and Trey Smith, you know, takes a couple of steps back and then anchors and then ends up tossing Vea just to the ground. And it's like, you know, that doesn't happen to him. He doesn't have that happen to him very often, and it did happen in that game. And so that was a positive sign to see Trey Smith be able to do that. So, yeah, the offensive line, I thought coming out of that game was impressive. And it feels like more of the Colts, a blip on the radar. But it's also a reminder that they are not infallible. It's also a reminder that they can't go into a game and lose. So there are games where they can go into and you go, well, yeah, they can lose this. And like any game the rest of the way. If they go and lose to the Colts where it felt like it was that big of a mismatch, and then the Colts lose at home to the Titans, in which, you know, the Titans had a pretty decent lead throughout most of it. It got, you know, close later on in that game. But if they can go in there and play that bad against the Colts, then, yeah, they could struggle next, you know, a week from today against the Raiders. They could struggle against the Jags, certainly. And I don't even want to go Jags because, you know, the Jags are playing some decent football, and they were leading the Eagles. I mean, you know, the still lone undefeated team. And they've got the Texans later on this year. So, yeah, they can go into a game and just simply lay an egg. But you don't expect that to happen when it's crunch time, when it is against teams that they look across and say, these are our peers, you know, things like that. You don't expect that to happen. And remember Eric Bieniemy on Thursday when he said, what, we got our ass kicked. And he said it a few times. And then I wrote down that quote because I thought that really stood out. When he said, they kicked our ass. We got exactly what we deserved. You're not good enough to think you can just show up and win. Now, that's isn't that the coaches saying what they thought the team did against the Colts? That they didn't have a good week of preparation, whatever it might have been? You know, coming off a big win against the Chargers, you got a couple of extra days off, so you feel like you can just relax and chill a little bit more. The Bucs are a big game coming up that next week on Sunday Night Football. The Colts aren't that good. So you're feeling pretty good about yourself. You know, you're feeling yourself a little bit. And Eric Bieniemy said, you know, you got humbled. So when he says it was good to get humbled, he said we got our ass kicked. And he said you're not good enough to go into a game and just think you can show up and win in the NFL. I mean, those are indications of what the coaches felt like the team prepared and got ready for the Colts like last week or 2 weeks ago. And this last week we heard the story of Andy Reid pregame or the night before saying, the week you guys have had a preparation, you're going to go out there and play awesome football. You guys are going to play awesome football because of what you've done this week. And they did that. And there's that belief that goes into it. And they came out and just fired on all cylinders. And I, you know, listening to the stats about the offensive line, Josh, I think we could probably do an hour of the show of just point, counterpoint, not even counterpoint, but just you go, I go, of just, okay, here's a cool stat from last night.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got a cool stat. Josh, your turn. Here's a cool stat. Oh, I read this tweet about this stat. Oh, your turn. You go. We could probably do an hour of all the stuff. Like, it was almost like this morning I'm trying to, you know, figure out how to organize everything, and it's like I'm just drowning in all these crazy stats, and I'm like, oh, that's a good one. Let me write that. Oh, that's a good one. Let me write that down. Yeah, cool. Now that you've got the stats done, what are you going to talk about? You dumbass. You know, what do you, besides just remember that time where Mahomes spun around and threw the touchdown? That was awesome.
I think that could be 4 hours. I think we could just do that for 4 hours, honestly. But yeah, if you don't want to, that's fine. Don't let me be the one that stops you, though.
No, we absolutely could, man. And I think we've hit on some of the bigger points in the first hour and then, you know, starting on this hour. So in the first hour, we talked about how big of a bounce back game it was for the Chiefs. And by the way, 913-3810-810. If you want to weigh in, we do have open phone lines. We'll talk with Field Yates at noon. We'll hear from Andy Reid coming up in the noon hour as well. Learn Funniest Best also to come here in the show. We talked about how big of a bounce back game it was for this Chiefs team. We talked about when they play their A game like that, which teams can, you know, play with the Chiefs. That, you know, if the Chiefs play, you know, like they did against the Colts, yeah, teams can beat them. If they play like that and bring their A game, it then requires the other team to play to their max level, and then it might be just a coin flip game back and forth. We talked about how we're done with the game-by-game referendums on this offense with and without Tyreek Hill. That against the Cardinals, the offense was fine without Tyreek Hill. Against the Chargers, it was really about the defense. And yeah, the Chargers made some good plays, but the defense was really good. And the Colts was about, this is what happens when you don't have Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs wide receivers and yada, yada, yada. And then last night, it's, oh my goodness, look how good the Chiefs are. EPA per drive, they're first, and points per drive, they're first. And Patrick Mahomes and EPA per, you know, drop back is first in the NFL. And, you know, they're really good. Do they even need Tyreek Hill anymore? Like, every single week, it doesn't need to be how good or bad this team is or this offense is with and without Tyreek, because, you know, Patrick Mahomes in the games that he has played, the eight games without number 10, You know, he completes 65% of his passes. He throws for 320 yards per game, and in the eight games, he's thrown 19 touchdowns and two interceptions. Turns out he's a really good player. Turns out Tyreek Hill's a really good player as well. I think both can survive without the other. Tyreek is surviving. Patrick Mahomes is surviving. So if the offense struggles against the Raiders on Monday night, I would like to avoid the, well, see, that no Tyreek Hill, this is what happens. Okay, so then what was the Bucs? What was the Colts? Were those the anomalies that stood out? Because I thought Juju Smith-Schuster played fine. I thought MVS played fine outside the drop pass on third and short, you know, in which apparently Kelce, you know, did the wrong thing and made it a little more congested than it should have been. Outside of that, I thought the wide receivers were perfectly fine. Sky Moore made some plays. You know, MVS with the big catch down the seam. Juju Smith-Schuster breaking tackles after catching the ball, those yards after catch. Kelce was his brilliant Kelce self. Mecole Hardman had his one catch, 4 yards. You know, the typical things you see from the wide receivers. And the running game, you know, did what they needed to do. The offense is fine. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Andy Reid. It's Eric Bieniemy. It's, Matt Nagy. And it's the best tight end in the NFL, the best quarterback in the NFL, an offensive line that's good enough, and wide receivers that are not just scrubs that you threw out there and found off the street. Like, the wide receiver group is not what they've been trying to find with kickers the last few weeks. They've got some guys who can make plays and who are good players, and that's what you need. Scheme them open, make the throw, make the catch, move the chains, and go on down the field. They were incredibly efficient on third down last night, and that's the one thing. It's like, can you live off being 72-73% on third down against really good teams? You'd like to avoid as many third downs as possible, right? You'd like to avoid those things. And each drive they had outside of the first drive, right? Each drive they had big third downs that they had to convert. And so those are those do-or-die plays. Defense gets off the field. Offense stay on the field. Continue that drive. And a drop pass here, or Mahomes doesn't flip it over to Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, in the air on third and short when he's getting pulled down, and, you know, they end up scoring a touchdown on that drive and go up 14-3. That's incomplete. They're punting the ball back to the Bucs, up 7-3. Maybe they're down 10-7 at that point. Like, little plays like that that start to accumulate that did not happen against the Colts is how you go and beat and control a game against what I believe to be a good team, despite the fact of a Bucs fan last night that was telling me that this Bucs team is not good and there is nothing impressive about the Chiefs. This is more about how bad the Bucs are. So,
we'll hear about that on Tuesday from Tad fans.
Yes. All right. I am looking forward to that.
You mentioned Voldemort's name again. I'm not sure if he's actually reached Voldemort status, but I feel like it might be good for the general discourse if we give Tyreek Hill that honor at some point.
Okay.
But you touched on something that I want to expand even bigger than you made it just there, because I think that this might be it. I think that today, or maybe this week, if you really want to unpack it, I think this week might be the last week that we have to mention Tyreek Hill in the context of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And I know you're sick of it. I know a lot of Chiefs fans are sick of viewing everything through a Tyreek Hill prism. Because it's exhausting. He's not on the team. And I totally understand that. But I think I said his name before I said the name of any active Kansas City Chiefs last night on the postgame show. And I was aware of it immediately. I knew what I did. I didn't mean to do it that way. But here's why I do think that last night's game is the last time that you should view the Chiefs through the Tyreek Hill prism. Not just in the repetitive single-game storylines, and is this who they are, is that who they are, but specifically, I think last night was the proof of concept for the entire Chiefs offseason. It was trading away Tyreek Hill and opting for a variety of pass catchers who can show up in big moments in different times when the matchup suits them. It was trading Tyreek Hill and using that, and along with also letting Tyrann Mathieu walk, to reload the defense with younger defenders who might be flying around a little more, maybe not end up in the right space. They did it last night without three starters, at least two and a half, depending on how you feel about Mike Dana. But more than anything else, it was the fact that they could just run some power. They were running some gap scheme stuff, too, that was working great. But the offensive line was controlling the line of scrimmage when they ran the football, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco were getting not just gaps. They were getting full-on corded off lanes to run through. Patrick Mahomes was able to work with this pocket. It wasn't untouched all day, but whenever there was pressure, he could slide up kind of through that B gap where he sometimes splits between Wiley and Trey Smith. He could float away from Orlando Brown's pressure. And then it was a third down falling to the ground, a little dump miracle to Juju. It's the play to Clyde in the end zone. It's finding Travis Kelce all over the place. It's finally hitting the deep shot with MVS. It is all it's Sky Moore getting involved in the offense again. Two tight ends scoring outside of Travis Kelce. The whole toolbox last night got opened, and Patrick Mahomes grabbed the wrench for a couple plays and the screwdriver over here, and then the offensive line just went ahead and cleared off the whole table. They laid out some new paper, started scratching some stuff up. This is what I think this offense looks like in a borderline best-case scenario for the rest of this season, and it throughout the quote-unquote post-Tyreek Hill era. It's still running through Travis Kelce, but it's finding moments from these other guys. When Mahomes says it's going to be a different guy every week, it's going to be a different guy every play, every drive, and as long as the offense keeps, to use an old word that has a lot of meaning here, if that keeps matriculating the ball down the field, but you're able to matriculate out of the hand of your quarterback, this, I think, is what Andy Reid and Brett Veach and Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes and the whole gang were envisioning whenever they said, okay, what if we do a hard reset of the offense this offseason? What if we trade Tyreek Hill and rebuild? I think this is what they were shooting for.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, you know, one of the takeaways, not yours specifically, but one of the takeaways last night is that, you know, while Patrick Mahomes is spreading the ball around, what it really shows is how selfish he is.
That's right.
In wanting to get all of, like, he wants to get the credit for no Tyreek Hill. So if he just throws to one guy, then it'd be like, well, they're trying to replace this Voldemort with one guy. Mm-hmm. But if he spreads it around, now he gets more credit, and it's a very selfish act by him to put up all those yards and touchdowns and convert on third downs all the time, because all he's caring about is what he's doing. While, yes, the team is also succeeding, mm-hmm. but it really starts with what he wants to do for himself. If the team succeeds, that's just secondary, right? I mean, that's the main takeaway.
It's a great point, and I'm so glad you brought that up. I did neglect to mention how good I thought your letter to the editor was.
Yeah, I wrote another letter, doubling down on it.
Good. I can't wait to see it. Yeah. Maybe that gets printed in ink front page this week. Come on.
This time I'm John in North Dakota. Not to Jeff in Ohio or wherever. Let's get to the phone lines. 913-3810-810. Josh, who do we have up?
Let's open up with Travis. No confirmation or denial if it's Travis Kelce or not. But Travis, you're in the zone.
I wish I was Travis Kelce.
We all do.
I thought that they played a really good game last night. I did still think that there were some things that they needed to clean up. The running back not being able to hit wide open holes, I did feel like was an issue at times. I don't understand how, like, especially on the goal line, how Clyde just hit the lane was 10 feet wide and he just slammed into the pile, Larry Johnson style. And you know, like, I didn't quite understand that. But the offensive line manhandled that defensive line. I mean, like you pointed out, there were times where Trey Smith was body slamming Beta on the ground. The receivers, I felt like, got open. Pat had time to find them. I don't have a ton to complain about. I mean, that was a complete win last night. So I'm excited going forward. I'm anxious to hear what Chidea has to say tomorrow night on the podcast, because he's so anti-Chief, it seems like. So I'm anxious to see what he'll find to complain about this time. So. Overall, great win. Thanks for taking the call, guys.
Travis, thank you for the call, man. 913-3810-810. Here's where I think we are with the running backs and Clyde specifically. I'm just accepting the fact that there'll be some wide open lanes that he doesn't see.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, you just have to accept it. It's not going to change. He is he's played football this long. He's not going to wake up one day and go, wait a minute, I can see clear. Like, I don't think he's going to get LASIK to have vision on the football field. It doesn't happen that way. And yes, I'm glad he scored, because had he not scored on that play and maybe they don't score a touchdown on that drive, there'd be a whole lot more conversation about the fact that it looked like there was a hole that was about 5 feet wide, and instead he decided to make it as difficult as possibly he can to score a touchdown there. I'm just accepting the fact that those are going to happen, that, you know, get what you can, break a tackle here or two, and then, you know, catch the ball out of the backfield. And, you know, it could have been a better throw, but also catch the ball if you're Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because it was just a beautifully designed play and could have been a touchdown. I'm just accepting those things at the running back position. They do not have a perfect running back back there. They've got a guy that, you know, needs to show a little more patience, and he did that last night with Pacheco. And they've got a guy that, you know, is just doesn't have the vision at the line of scrimmage to see where the lanes are opening up at and when to cut back and things like that. It's just moving forward, that's just what they're going to be.
Yeah, you say they don't have a perfect running back. I think what you meant is they're not currently starting their perfect running back, but, you know, lost in translation. Yeah, I get it.
Yep. Jerick McKinnon, you're right. That is exactly right. Give Jet more. I'm mad at Jet for not keeping that thing and running straight ahead. That thing was wide open. It was a red sea. And he's like, oh, I'll just give it to Clyde. He'll just run through the other hole, not hole.
That should have been a McKinnon touchdown. You're right. That's true. You should have just kept that.
There.
Yeah.
Very quickly, speaking, since you mentioned Jerick McKinnon.
It's no rush, Beard. Take your time.
Somebody did ask on the Twitch, talking about Jerick McKinnon's use in the goal to go in other short yardage situations. Your thoughts?
He struggled. I think the whole team has struggled in that. But certainly, yeah, I think they haven't found a running back, Ronald Jones, that they can give the ball to that I think can, you know, either find the hole that's there and just be a natural runner and have vision of where it's going to open up, or, you know, maybe open one up himself. I think Clyde can do that a little bit. I think Pacheco was shown that as well. Jerick McKinnon's not going to be that guy. Like, he's going to have a hole that's there, or be able to have a jump cut, or, you know, the vision to see where it's at. And, I mean, I'd like to see him get the ball more, but that's just me. But I think they're fine right now. Like, here's the thing. They're not giving the ball to Colby Smith instead of Jamal Charles.
Right.
That's what I'll say. Like, they are not just having somebody who is showing that every time they touch the ball, they're picking up 7-8 yards per carry while handing it off to a guy who's averaging 2.3. We're not seeing that with this Chiefs team. So if they give it to Jerick, if they give it to Pacheco, if they give it to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, hopefully it's blocked well. Hopefully they can break a tackle or just stay on schedule and in front of the chains and keep it moving and let Patrick Mahomes be Patrick Mahomes on non-second and tens and third and longs because a run got stopped or stuffed at the line of scrimmage. That, to me, is the run game, ultimately. And I think last night it did that.
You want another call, Jason? It feels like that's the rhythm of the show. Storyteller's on hold. What's up, Storyteller?
Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Hats off to J.J. Watt. I've had my heart shot 3 times, and only the last time did I ever feel like I could kick someone's butt later in the week.
Have you done it before a football game?
No, sure.
Okay.
That was a great weekend for the local guys and, you know, all the college teams, too. And the Colorado job is open. We have someone we know that should be interested in.
Yeah.
A question for you is Carlos. What is the percentage of plays that he drops back?
I don't know what the percentage is, but it's higher than I thought it would be. Let me just say that. It's a higher percentage than I guessed it would be when they drafted him.
I was surprised he did that at the goal line, too.
Yeah. In fact, that Legarius Sneed sack fumble, Chris Jones recovery, was George Karlaftis dropping back and guarding, I don't know who it was. Was it maybe Miller, Scotty Miller? Maybe it was Beasley. I don't know. The white receiver in the slot. And George Karlaftis dropped back with him.
Wes Welker?
It
was Amendola. Sorry about that. I knew we were gonna get it. Was
hey,
Lance
man,
Long.
Hey.
Lance
right, listen,
Long
I know it's spelled different, but it's too soon to be saying that guy's last name around here. Okay, it's only been a week.
My apologies. But Brady pump faked, and I think he pump faked because he wasn't expecting George Karlaftis, the defensive end, to drop back in that spot. And by pump faking, Legarius Sneed then sacked him. So he's dropping back more than I thought he would. But at least on that design and scheme, and also Legarius Sneed being a brilliant acting, that it worked out with Tom Brady going, oh, I didn't think the defensive end was going to be right there. I need to then pat the ball and wait for Miller to start his route to the outside, and oops, the ball's out. So mean, when it works, it works. When it doesn't, it's like, why is Justin Houston guarding Antonio Brown?
Right, that's the thing, and a storyteller, appreciate it. That's the thing with Tom Brady also. Getting him to be surprised by something is difficult, so I probably have a little longer leash for dropping a defensive end in coverage in a circumstance like that where your edges haven't gotten pressure with four. You're trying to draw something up. So you let Carl Loftus drift back into the zone. He's a big dude. He's agile enough to eat up a little bit of space. If Snead's also coming. I don't necessarily want George Karloftis standing up and playing outside linebacker, but, you know, if you're bringing pressure from one spot and trying to cover it up with Carl Loftus, you could play this clip back to me in week 14 whenever it cost the Chiefs a game, and I would tell you that I'm eyes wide open right now. But it's okay to do if you're trying to get Tom Brady, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when whoever it was that caught the ball, that Frank Clark was over by him. It might have been Fournette out of the backfield that Fournette caught the ball, and Frank Clark had dropped into coverage, and Tom Brady hit him, and it was a first down. It's like, okay, you win some, you lose some. But they had a very, very big win on that particular play and scheme and design, and it worked out well because it went into whatever the Bucs were planning on doing on that play, and it made Tom Brady actually hesitate a little bit, which was all that needed to happen because L'Jarius Sneed is a brilliant blitzer. That certainly worked out on that end. Who's up next?
Let's sneak in one more call this break with Rev. Rev, you're on the zone. What's up, Rev?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, man?
Oh, man, everything's good. I was just wondering. I just had two things. When do you think the media's going to put to bed, do we need Tyreek Hill? And then one other thing, do you think these referees are just totally just missing these calls? And I'll listen off there.
Rev, I appreciate the phone call, man. I'm hoping it's after last night. You know, we talked about it a couple of times with Tyreek or whatever the nickname is going to be. I'm hoping that we're done with the single-game referendums. I talked last week that going back and looking at the All-22, I saw open receivers. I saw an offensive line that didn't give Mahomes enough time. I saw a game plan that it looked like the Chiefs wanted to go deep and stretch the field and attack over the top to the Colts, and maybe not the this is what we will typically do. So the game plan and calls and things like that, were they great? I don't know. You'd have to be in the film room and be in the coach's room to really understand that. But I didn't think the offensive line played well, but I thought they were open receivers last week. So I didn't think it was a problem of Mahomes is holding the football because everybody's attached to their defender. So I'm hoping last night is the case. And then the referees, I mean, is anything particular or specific? The only thing that I had an issue with, and I get the letter of the law, was, you know, Juan Thornhill and the unnecessary roughness on Mike Evans.
That
in
was
the end
bad.
Zone.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Those that are saying letter of the law and the official throwing it, you're assuming Juan Thornhill knows that Mike Evans dropped the football.
Correct.
That it went through his hands. He's wearing a helmet, okay? The helmet does not have a camera on the top of his head like a GoPro where he can see what's going on.
He's coming at a level that would make it even harder to see even through the face mask because he's trying not to hit him in the helmet with his helmet. So he hits him shoulder to side.
Can you imagine if Mike Evans was bringing the ball down and Juan Thornhill just, slid to the side and didn't touch him, and he lands and gets 2 feet in and they score a touchdown? Like, what are you doing, Juan?
Would have been
try
bad.
To knock the ball out. Yeah. It's awful. Like, he hit him right where the ball was going to be when he brought his hands down. He hit him with the shoulder. He hit Mike Evans' shoulder. But because if Evans catches the ball, that flag is not thrown. If Evans is bringing the ball
totally,
down,
absolutely.
And Juan Thornhill hits him, if he jars the ball loose or Mike Evans catches it, that flag is not thrown. He dropped the ball, then Thornhill hit him, and they throw the flag because of that. I just, you know, that's the one that I would complain about, but, you know, I don't know if there were other ones that I missed.
Here's my very meager defense on that one and for referees in general. It's one of the reasons I do not extend this one to the Chris Jones flag from last week for reasons that will become evident. We at home have a better view of what the refs are doing than the refs do because we have the benefit of slow motion replay 10 seconds after the play's over, if not less than that. So I have a little bit of empathy for referees who are being shown up by the power of 4K instant replay. But that is not an excuse for the NFL. It's an excuse for the 65-year-old men who are running down the sidelines squinting, you know, trying to see if the ball crossed the plane or not. But the NFL has better technology that we are all seeing in our living rooms. I think we're hopefully, maybe we're a couple years away at most from there being some real advancements on how penalties get called and rules get enforced, yeah. Because this we know the answers at home before the zebras on the field know, and that makes their job pretty much impossible.
So what you're saying is instead of a note card, they're going to use a measuring tape.
Exactly. Just one long measuring, 1 yardstick, actually, so they have to use it 10 times, you know, from
the nose to the ball. Does it have that little metal slide piece on one end?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because you can stomp that into the turf, you know, and so it'll hold itself there, so it'll be really easy to unfurl it that way. Just have somebody stand on one end, roll out the other way, boom, 10 yards.
We've got it all figured out.
Yeah, this is easy.
We are solving this. Why do they have to have all these owner meetings and things like that?
These cameras and slow-mos. Get a measuring tape and put your hand in the dirt.
Yes, we'll take a timeout. But, you know, as far as the Juan Thornhill hit, I was surprised to see in a college game over the weekend, I can't remember which one it was, but there was a targeting that was called, and they ended up taking the targeting back because it was like a bang-bang play like that. And the receiver, the ball had went through his hands, and then the safety hit him. And they were like, well, it's a defenseless receiver. And the guys on the broadcast were saying, yeah, it's defenseless, but that safety doesn't know that the ball has already went through his hands. He hits him right after the ball goes through. And, you know, that's you got to give some benefit of the doubt to how fast the game is and what the players are seeing. And they took it off the board. The referees came back and said there was no targeting. I was shocked by that. I thought it was a good call. So I wanted to pass that along. At least there's some learning.
Yep.
At least there's because a few years ago when the targeting penalty first came on, it was just there was never one that was taken off the board. It was targeting. You're gone. We can replay it all we want, but we're not going to overturn it. It's just we're going to err on the side of you're ejected. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling along, hanging out at Blue Hills Country Club for the kids. KC.org is the golf tournament out here for the kids. F-O-R-E, the kids, KC.org. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Dip them in once, flip them over, dip them in again. I don't know.
Oh, a double dip.
I would double dip the baby.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
+1 333-810-810 taking your phone calls. We will talk with Field Yates coming up at noon, our NFL insider from ESPN. We'll hear from Andy Reid as well around 12:30 or so. We got Learn Funniest Best today. 913-3810-810. 913-912-4810. Texas, as a KU fan, we had to listen about Roy for about 2 years after he left. That's a good comparison. It's really good. I hope that's not the case because obviously number 10 is not, you know, Roy to KU. It would be like, you know, if Andy Reid then took the North Carolina job, which would be really weird. Then maybe we'd be hearing about it a lot for the oddity of him doing that and then also not being at with the Chiefs anymore. 913-912-4810. Texas, McKinnon did the right thing. On the goal line play, he was supposed to read the defensive end, I assume, who at the time of the handoff was standing right in his path. Kelsey didn't get to him until after the handoff. I mean, look, it was a touchdown. And I know when we watch the replay, and who knows, in the film room they might say, Clyde, great call going to that spot. I mean, I have no idea. But it certainly looked like an open lane. And, again, I just think that's going to happen. Another text said, have to say I was amazed to see the speed and toughness of Pacheco last night. Kept his feet churning after initial contact. Was huge in the running game. Yeah, I agree. Credit where credit is due. I had mentioned I hadn't seen the love affair with Pacheco that others had. I saw it last night. I see what people think he could be. And I thought, you know, when the hole was there, he hit it and he got there with a pretty good pace. And when it needed to develop, he didn't just run as fast as he could to whatever gap he was supposed to head into. So 913-3810-810, 913-912-4810 to be a part of the show, part of the conversation. Texas, this is a great point on Juan Thornhill. It says, remember when Breland Speaks let go of Brady because he was afraid of a penalty?
I do now.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, thanks, Texter.
No, I mean, I get it. Like, let's not be reminded of that. But I totally forgot about that, you know, letting him go because you didn't want to get a penalty because, you know, it is Tom Brady. And it's part of your point you know, Lebo's point last week of they should know where the line is. Like, you do need to know where the line is of, you know, talking. And Chris Jones did not have words to say after he picked up the fumble, which was great.
Just, it's really about, awesome. You know, what I tweeted at the time also is I just wish Juan Thornhill would have run up next to Mike Evans and just yelled a naughty word at him. And maybe that would have been enough of an impact, you know, for him to drop the ball. Then he wouldn't have had to have hit him so hard. He wouldn't have gotten penalized. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's really on the Chiefs at this point to figure out where that line is, even though the referees won't tell them.
That's exactly right. Text says, in regards to the Pacheco, text says, please keep Josh off the text line.
You read that text, and I just was kind of sitting here just kind of nodding along, like, yeah, that'll really track. But really, that is the thing. The patience is what we did not see from him in college. Like, some of the physical traits, so many running backs out of college have some combination of excellent physical tools that you could talk yourself into them at the next level. That's why you don't draft them too highly. It's why running backs late in the draft are really exciting sometimes. But the foot movement and the patience last night on at least a couple separate occasions legitimately just in real time jumped off the screen. This isn't like scrubbing back through after the fact. One of those runs down the field, he really like slowed up, waited for Andrew Wiley to get his block set. And I think Pacheco literally slapped Andrew Wiley. I'm not 100% sure. I've not seen that there is contact. But he was waiting to, if nothing else, ran right off the butt of Andrew Wiley. And then in another spot, I think it was later in the game than that, whenever he's running off, I believe, the right side, he just kind of chops his feet a little bit, keeps going, comes to a little bit of a pause before letting the block set up. I think Tooney came around and pulled and sealed on the right side. And then this is, there's a way to measure this, you know, with some next-gen stats or whatever, but from the eyeball test, I'm going to tell you, it looked special to me that he got there, hovered in place, kept his feet moving, and then resumed with the explosiveness of a guy who had been running at full speed for a couple yards. That explosiveness out of the little chop step, just keep your feet moving, that's something that adds to the violence whenever somebody comes in and tries to hit you with an arm tackle. You're not going to bring somebody down who has that explosiveness as if they're at full speed. And if you are threatening that for a defense, your top speed is going to be higher and hit much sooner. So I have been on board the long-term Isaiah Pacheco hype train since the draft. I am on the let's keep giving this dude some more work hype train now more than ever because of some of the specific traits we saw from him. Running back production is obviously very dependent on the offensive line all the time. Mm-hmm. Go ask Najee Harris. Ask him how that has worked for him as a hostage in Pittsburgh. But when it was there, Pacheco took it. And when it wasn't there, Pacheco waited for it. And that was very impressive to me.
I do want to point out, too, that, you know, I was disappointed last week that Ronald Jones was sick.
Yeah.
But I'm actually glad that Ronald Jones did not play this weekend. And here's why. If Ronald Jones had played and got the bulk of carries and did exactly what Clyde Edwards-Helaire did,
yes.
Wouldn't we say Ronald Jones is the guy you got to give it to every time? It's got to be right. You've got to have – he's the difference. Enough with Edwards-Helaire. Give the ball to Rojo, and you got to figure out some pass protection issues, certainly. You don't want to be too predictable when he's on the field and you know you're not going to pass the ball. But the man is the difference in the running game. He didn't play, and they had a phenomenal game where the running backs did what they did, and they picked up a ton of yards on the ground. And so it's not just it was all about Ronald Jones. It was about the offensive line getting back to kicking ass. It was about the offensive line doing what they were doing. And I think the running backs played better than they did last week, too.
Yes.
I think they were they played at a better pace. And Texas, with this kicker last week, we win. Hats off to him. He was dead center on every kick. He was. It was right down the middle every time. I did not have once the PAT on the first drive was right down the middle. I'm like, okay. Although Amendola,
Voldemort. Now, Voldemort for real now. Actual Voldemort. Yeah. He deserves it more than Tyreek Hill, unfortunately.
That's right. Against the Chargers, he was fine. You know, I was like, oh, they helped. They won the game because he made his kicks against the Chargers. And also, it's how crazy the NFL is. Because I do believe the Chiefs got refocused and humbled, and you know maybe they would have done it anyway, but I think there was an extra little chip, there was an extra little push from the Colts loss to the Bucs game that if they just go out and play their regular game and beat the Bucks or beat the Colts by like 10, 12 points, do they show up last night with that same intensity, that same bleep you, that same we're getting our season back on track mentality and feel to the game last night? I don't know. I have no idea what they would look like, but I know the loss to the Colts really stuck with them and clearly bothered them. And Andy Reid even said it, you know, the night before when he said, the way you guys are prepared this week, you're going to go out and play good football. And they went out there and they did that. And then they talked about it after, about what last week was like. I think that helped in looking as good as they did in the game last night. I hope that Colts loss doesn't come back to haunt them. But in a different world, maybe they beat the Colts and lose to the Bucks. And they're sitting 3-1 right now in the exact same spot, only a different loss to an NFC team that wouldn't, you know, affect them in the tiebreaker as opposed to a loss to an AFC team. Who knows from that standpoint. But we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. We'll hear from Field Yates coming up at noon. Andy Reid in the noon hour as well. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
It would have been a... Just killed a spider that was crawling on the table here. Take that, spider. Huh? Yeah! In your face! Punk!
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, hanging out at the Blue Hills Country Club for thekidskc.org. F-O-R-E, thekidskc.org. They do amazing, amazing work in donating to Children's Mercy Anxiety and Depression Clinic. That is going to be state-of-the-art here in Kansas City, and literally millions of dollars that they have donated and given to Children's Mercy to help combat anxiety and depression in kids, teenagers, children, and to try to eliminate teen suicide. F-O-R-E, thekidskc.org. You can go there, see how you can donate, give back. Also, the dinner going on tonight, you can still purchase tickets for that. Bill Self in attendance, along with a number of other KU Jayhawk players will be there, and the auction going on as well with some cool stuff. So F-O-R-E, thekidskc.org, forthekidskc.org. We will talk with Field Yates coming up next, then hear from Andy Reid. More in the Zone on a Monday.